I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, the race is on. Vice President Harris and former President Trump both seek to gain momentum as the election takes shape. Crisis at the border. Analysis of a troubling watchdog report about unaccompanied migrant children. Fire in Iceland. New developments in the volcano that until a few months ago was dormant for 800 years. And resurrecting a major story. A closer look at the recent study shedding new light on the Shroud of Turin. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Rose of Lima. Our top story tonight, the road to the White House just took another big turn today. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. entered the race as a Democrat, but left the party last fall to run as an independent. And now he is suspending his campaign and throwing his support behind a Republican. It comes on the heels of the Democratic National Convention, where the first woman of color was nominated for president. Vice President Kamala Harris's historic night.
I accept your nomination to be president of the United States of America.
And the biggest speech of her political life.
Our nation with this election has a precious, fleeting opportunity to move past the bitterness, cynicism, and divisive battles of the past.
As the new day dawned, so did a new reality. The hard part of the campaign has just begun for the vice president. And as one candidate sets out to blaze a new trail, another decides to put his presidential ambitions on hold.
Oh, I want everyone to know that I am not terminating my campaign. I am simply suspending it and not ending it. Three great causes drove me to enter this race in the first place, primarily. And these are the principal causes that persuaded me to leave the Democratic Party and run as an independent. And now to throw my support to President Trump. The causes were free speech, the war in Ukraine, and the war on our children.
Not even an hour later, former President Trump quick to respond.
We just had a very nice endorsement from RFK Jr., Bobby.
Later today, the former president will have a rally in Arizona with his campaign saying that he will be joined by a special guest. And joining us now is Tom Bevin, co-founder and president of Real Clear Politics. Tom, always great to be with you. So did this announcement by RFK Jr., did it come as a surprise?
Well, I mean, it was leaked a couple of days ago, so we kind of had an inkling this was coming. But prior to that, I don't know that a lot of people thought that RFK was going to necessarily exit the race and or endorse anyone for president. And so, look, this race right now, Tracy, is so tight. I think this is a really consequential moment in this campaign because a lot of these battleground states are, you know, within a point or less. And RFK has anywhere between 3 to 5%. And most of the analysis that we've done and the Trump campaign just released an analysis of their own suggesting that RFK voters will break disproportionately toward Donald Trump as opposed to Kamala Harris. And so in states where the vote final vote could be decided by 5,000, 10,000, 15,000 votes, this could be a very major event in this campaign.
Yeah, absolutely. Pretty significant for sure. Tom, what did you think of his speech and what do you think is coming next for him?
Well, we'll see how much he actually campaigns for Donald Trump. If he's out on the stump, if he's really sort of doing media and really working to try and get his supporters to come over to Donald Trump. I thought his speech was, frankly, amazing. I mean, he absolutely blistered the Democratic Party. He blistered the media for their role in, taking his campaign and really silencing him and doing all sorts of, you know, dirty tricks and whatnot, censoring him. It was fairly amazing to see him lay that all out there. And so to the extent that he also talked about democracy and, you know, Everybody says we're here to promote democracy and save democracy, but is democracy really a joke in this country? The way he thought if he had a fair election, he would have had a good shot at winning this election. We can argue whether that's true or not, but he didn't get a fair shot. And I think that's almost hard to even dispute at this point.
Yeah. Tom, almost out of time, but before we let you go, you were at the DNC, and I want to get your thoughts on that. What was the big takeaway for you?
Well, look, the Democrats did a good job of putting together a program that highlighted their, you know, their candidate. Wasn't a lot of policy, but there was a lot of glitz. It was very much a continuation of the Vibe campaign. And I think, as you just reported, Tracy, look, things are going to get more difficult for the vice president now as we get into the nitty gritty of the campaign. There's going to be at least one debate. She is going to have to face, I think, some sort of media scrutiny. And she's going to have to lay out more policy positions because there weren't a lot of policies that were articulated over the last four days in Chicago.
Tom, thanks so much for weighing in. Always appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, the chairman of the Federal Reserve says, quote, the time has come to soon begin reducing interest rates. The Fed's benchmark interest rate remains at a 23-year high.
The time has come for policy to adjust. The direction of travel is clear, and the timing and pace of rate cuts will depend on incoming data, the evolving outlook, and the balance of risks.
In response to Powell's comments, stocks immediately climbed higher with the expectation of rate cuts. Powell did not indicate when the rate cuts would begin or how large they would be. For analysis, we turn now to Patrick Horan, economics research fellow with the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. Patrick, good to be with you again. First, your reaction to the news of the potential rate cut.
Thanks for having me on, Tracy. Well, most people were expecting interest rate cuts were going to be coming at some point soon. And the expectation was already there's going to be one cut in September at the Federal Reserve's upcoming meeting, at the FOMC meeting. That's the decision-making body of the Fed for monetary policy. So you can think of an interest rate cut as adding liquidity or adding money into the economy. So inflation has been cooling a lot. It's still a little bit above the Federal Reserve's 2% target. But the thinking is, well, inflation will keep trending down to 2%. Unemployment has ticked up a little bit. Job growth has slowed a bit. So the thinking now is, okay, now it's time to do at least one interest rate cut, likely more, depending on what data looks like over the next few months.
Yeah, Patrick, how much of a help will this actually be for the economy, though?
Again, it's hard to tell. I mean, you could think like, oh, it's just one 25 basis point decrease. That might not matter too much. I mean, on the margin, maybe that does matter for someone who's making decisions to buy a car or buy a home. Maybe it's not too many people. But as you mentioned as you were explaining this issue, stocks went up a lot. So you could also think people might be thinking, oh, stocks have gone up. I have more wealth. Maybe I can spend some more. So it could help achieve the Fed's goal of a soft landing. That is, inflation keeps falling, unemployment, and without unemployment ticking up some more. So it's hard to tell right now. We're really just going to see how events play out over the next few months.
Yeah, quickly, Fed Chair Jerome Powell says inflation largely is under control. What do you think about that? Do you agree?
I think that's generally right. We've had a few, so the beginning of the year, January and February, we had some disappointing reports of inflation coming in a bit higher than expected. But more recently, the month-to-month inflation numbers have been looking pretty good about what forecasters expected, or maybe a little bit better in a few cases. I think it's reasonable to do at least one cut. And there are also reasons to think that monetary policy works with a bit of a lag. So even if it's not quite at two, there's a good argument it'll keep trending downward. At the same time, though, I don't think the Fed should get complacent and think that it's a slam dunk. There have been a lot of times in the past few years where the Fed has forecasted where it thinks inflation will go and where interest rates will go, and it was very off. So I don't think the Fed should promise too much. And I think the trajectory we're on right now is pretty reasonable.
Patrick, thank you so much. Great to get your insights.
Thanks for having me.
Well, on Capitol Hill, a Homeland Security Department internal watchdog has released a troubling report. It claims U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement has lost track of a massive number of unaccompanied migrant children who've crossed the southern border, raising fears of exploitation and even trafficking. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now with that story. Eric.
Good evening, Tracy. Yes, according to the report sent to Congress this week, more than 250,000 unaccompanied children have crossed the border in the last 5 years. It also said the Immigration Customs and Enforcement Agency must, quote, take immediate action to ensure their safety. Experts tell me Border Protection isn't even using its legal authority to detain them.
They are advised by the politicals in the administration to not place illegal aliens, many of them, into court proceedings. And as this Inspector General report explains, that is a key opportunity for government officials to encounter these children and verify if they are okay.
Laura Reese adds that children are often handed over to unvetted illegal migrants, predators, and even gang members. Republican Senator Josh Hawley says this is unacceptable. He sent a letter to DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas demanding action. Quote, your agency's failure to issue court notices to these children limits the ability to monitor their location and status. In the Inspector General's words, without such ability, there is thus no assurance that children are safe. The report adds that thousands of children never appear for their immigration hearings after being released from government custody. Democrats blame Republicans for the problem.
The Republicans turned down bipartisan border legislation that they had already agreed to. They ought to change their minds and support our bill. If not, President Biden has moved forward.
So what's the answer? Reese says a 2008 law needs to be repealed that guarantees immigration benefits to unaccompanied children, enticing them to travel to the border.
Immigration is in DHS. It's in State Department. It's in Justice Department. It's in Health and Human Services. It's in the Labor Department. And it just creates chaos. And for advocates who want more illegal immigration and want open borders, you wouldn't design a better system.
Senator Bill Cassidy, the lead Republican on the Labor Committee, has called for a hearing to investigate the allegations of sexual abuse of unaccompanied migrant children by a government contractor. The Justice Department filed a lawsuit against Southwest Key, alleging that its employees have engaged in a pattern of abuse and harassment of children in its shelters since at least 2015. Tracy?
All right. Thank you so much, Eric, for that report. Well, changes to election law were halted in Indonesia after thousands of protesters attempted to storm parliament. Police used tear gas and water cannons to disperse the protesters who had torn down a fence and were throwing rocks at security. The proposed changes have been criticized as a way to strengthen the political influence of the outgoing president. All for the sixth time since last December, a major volcano is erupting in Iceland. Lava is spewing through the volcano in the southwestern part of the country. Roads are closed, though the lava is not flowing toward a nearby resort town. Most people left that town in December following the first eruption. Prior to that, the volcano was dormant for 800 years. The most recent eruption is not expected to impact air travel. One of Canada's two major railroads is back on track, bringing an end to a work stoppage over a contract dispute. Canadian National trains started rolling at 7 a.m. Trains operated by Canadian Pacific Kansas City remain parked. The Canadian government ordered the disputes to enter arbitration amid fears the strike could hurt the economy. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including three-star review. Celebrities take the DNC by storm, but how do their endorsements play with the voters?
And together, let's all choose Kamala Harris!
I am here tonight because I am an American and because I am a voter and because we, the people, are stronger when all our voices are heard.
A rapper Lil Jon, media mogul Oprah, and actress Kerry Washington. Those were just a few of the big names at the DNC. And no, Beyonce was not part of the program. But when it comes to celebrities and candidates, an endorsement could help or could it hinder a campaign. To discuss this, let's bring in University of Pennsylvania Wharton School of Business Professor of Neuroscience, Psychology, and Marketing, Michael Platt. Professor Platt, great to be with you today. You co-authored a 2023 study titled The Marketing Psychology Behind Celebrity Endorsements. Tell us about the findings.
Sure. So we were really interested in the question of why does celebrity seem to sell? I mean, why in the world should we care about people that we'll ever meet? We'll never meet, excuse me. And so we did a study where we basically brought people to the lab. We had them look at ads that had either celebrities or non-celebrities in them with different kinds of products, and then asked them what they would choose. And then we also measured their eye movements and their pupil size. And what was really cool, perhaps not surprisingly, is that having a celebrity there made people more likely to choose the product. Okay, but why? And what we found is that what the presence of a celebrity seemed to do was to reduce uncertainty and to boost your confidence in the product itself. And that was what moved people to be much more likely to choose it.
Are there certain demographics that match up with that, or age ranges?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, basically, this study was aimed at uncovering the subconscious processes that really seem to affect all the choices that we make. And in fact, we'd done very similar studies, believe it or not, in monkeys, and showed that the equivalent of a monkey celebrity, so the dominant monkey in the group, had a similar effect on monkeys choosing different things. And in fact, monkeys would give up juice, trade some juice to see a picture of a dominant monkey. And we could actually advertise common household goods to monkeys just by pairing them with monkey celebrities.
I know you also talk about something called the vampire effect. What is that?
So celebrities, by their nature, they're familiar, they're well-known, they're popular, they're often attractive, and those features tend to attract our attention. And what we attend to is turned up in the brain, it's boosted in the brain, and what we are not paying attention to is turned down. So there's the potential that having a celebrity, you know, on the podium next to you or in the ad next to you could kind of suck up all the attention of the viewer and leave very little left over for the person who's being endorsed, in this case, a candidate for office.
Yeah, and there were a large amount of celebrities that were endorsing Kamala Harris at the DNC. What was your reaction to that?
Well, I mean, it's great to see so much enthusiasm, but it is a little bit surprising. There's a lot of celebrity to keep track of. And so perhaps they were going for trying to make sure they hit every different demographic and every different kind of thing that people like, you know, whether that's music or whether that's, acting or celebrities in general. But it's kind of a lot. It might be a little bit of overload.
All right. We're going to leave it right there, Professor Platt. Thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you.
Well, officials in Norway are considering whether to scale back pro-life protections. The new proposal would allow abortion until the 18th week. Currently, abortion is allowed through the first 12 weeks of pregnancy. The change would be the first change to the abortion policy in nearly 50 years. With flu season right around the corner, the FDA approved an updated version of the COVID-19 vaccine. Officials say the update targets a recent strain of the virus. Pfizer and Moderna are set to start distributing millions of vaccines in the coming days, with a third distributor joining in just a few weeks. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, Shrouded in Mystery. A new study sheds light on the Shroud of Turin. We have analysis from Father Robert Spitzer. Now to to a story that has been making the rounds on social media this week about an apparent new discovery regarding the Shroud of Turin. Reports say there is new evidence the shroud is 2,000 years old, which coincides with our Lord's life and crucifixion. These reports originally surfaced in 2022, but what appears to be new are studies concluded earlier this summer. They were focused on bloodstains and scourge marks found on the shroud and allude to Christ's death by being nailed to a cross, a common method of execution by the Romans at the time in 33 AD. And for analysis, we turn now to Father Robert Spitzer, president of the Magis Center of Reason and Faith. He is also the host of EWTN's Father Spitzer's Universe. Father Spitzer, great to be with you today. As we know, you've written and lectured on the Shroud for many, many years. Now, what is your reaction to this new scientific research?
Well, I think it has been out there and piling up for quite some time now. This new wide-angle X-ray scattering test is a very good, reliable, peer-reviewed test that was put together by Dr. Liberato Di Caro and his team at the Italian National Labs. I think the result is excellent. It was done on several different strands from the Shroud of Turin, taken from different places, and it shows pretty conclusively that the shroud originated between 54 to 75 AD, right in that area, because the samples matched from this test the same samples that were taken from linens that are accurately dated with an excellent provenance back to that time in Israel. I think the test is good because it's non-carbon related, so you don't have to worry about any carbon buildup from, for example, the fire of Chambéry in the 1500s, and you don't have to worry about neutron irradiation that could have come from this radiation burst that led to the image on the shroud that might have transformed the N14, the nitrogen-14, into carbon-14 and elevated the carbon content. So this is really a carbon-free test. I think it accurately portrays a 2,000-year age for the Shroud of Turin, right at the mid-century, mid-first century, at the time of Christ.
Father Spitzer, what's the Church's official position on the Shroud, and how should Catholics view this relic?
Well, first of all, the Church will not take a position on the Shroud per se, at least certainly not with respect to the scientific testing. I think the Shroud can approve it. I mean, the Church can approve, looking at the Shroud and venerating it, for purposes of devotion, but in no way would the Shroud be a necessary building block to faith in Jesus Christ. I mean, there is so much good historical and exegetical evidence for Jesus today, you really don't need the Shroud. Nevertheless, at the very same time, if the Shroud is shown not only to have this 2,000-year-old dating, and I think, already we have three other dating tests, a Fourier transform inference spectroscopy, a Raman laser spectroscopy, and a mechanical compressibility and tension test. All of them, when the weighted test results come in, give an age of about 90 AD. So now you really, with this good peer-reviewed wide-angle scattering test, you've got a pretty good idea. A mid-first century is the time the pollen grains and fossils really do indicate an origin in northern Judea and Jerusalem. But what's really important is if we find cosmogenic isotopes embedded in that shroud in the next scientific investigation, things like chlorine-36 and calcium-41, which really only happen near, an atomic reaction. If we find those embedded in the shroud in any abundance, we'll know that this shroud was produced by a tremendous burst of particle radiation, which, frankly, would be so, unusual. There's no scientific naturalistic explanation for it. It would really have to be a kind of a supernatural event, in which, the entire body, 7 octillion, perfectly stable atomic nuclei actually were transformed into particles that etched the the image of the shroud, the image of the man onto the shroud. And this would, you know, the odds of this happening simultaneously at one point in time are about the same as a monkey typing the first two acts of Macbeth. Perfectly by random tapping of the keys in a single try. So, like I said, we don't need the shroud to establish faith. We could do that on the basis of the church alone, on the word of Christ alone in Scripture. We have a fantastic evidence for Jesus that it comes from many contemporary hostile sources like Flavius Josephus and Cornelius Tacitus. People like that, which definitely show there are historians hostile to Christianity, writing around 80 to 90 AD, already, you know, that show the historicity of Jesus. We have all kinds of evidence of Jesus' crucifixion from a variety of other sources. But the main thing is, if this really does pan out, you not only have evidence for the existence of Jesus, you would also have evidence for his passion and crucifixion, and also evidence that the gospel narratives actually recorded the history of the passion and crucifixion precisely as it occurred. So in other words, the shroud validates the gospel narratives, and so the gospel narratives really would be talking about this unique crucifixion event with a crown of thorns, a spear in the side, etc. All this is writ large anatomically, scientifically, on the Shroud of Turin. But more than that, you would actually have a significant evidence of a tremendous burst of radiation. This is the most unusual image in the world today. There's no image like it, and it's the most scientifically tested historical artifact in history. So you have this together,
Father Spitzer, thank you so much for your time. I'm sorry to jump in. We're running out of time. This is so fascinating. I wish we had more time, but thank you so much for speaking with us about this. Very exciting, and God bless you.
God bless you, too.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.